This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing. This is J. Douglas Barker. We discuss a Balboa Press release titled Reclaimed, and our author is Ray Cook. Welcome, Ray.
Thank you, Jay. Pleasure to be here.
This is a distinctive title, for some unusual, but the cover art is ultra-contemporary. Ray, share with our listeners the significance of the title, Reclaimed.
Well, the title Reclaimed means a lot to me. It has many different significations. I wanted to use a one-word title that would be open-ended to any reader, because I know that we each have our individual story. And so if they couldn't relate directly to my story, my stories share universal themes. So whatever Reclaim means to them, I wanted to have their own interpretation. You mentioned the cover. I chose a very enigmatic cover because, again, I wanted that to be an open interpretation to the reader as well.
And your current occupation is as a flight attendant.
Correct.
And yes. Is this the first book you've written?
My very first. I didn't know that I was going to write a book, but I'm glad that I have. And yes, it is my first.
What motivated you to put this on paper? You've actually discussed your life story.
Yes. Well, I wasn't going to. Like I mentioned before, I started writing this from the suggestion and encouragement from my therapist. He believed in the potential of my stories to possibly help other people who could identify or relate to them. And I thought it was crazy because I never liked writing. I hated English classes going through school, especially writing papers. And I was very reluctant at first. But once I started the writing process, it became self-motivating. Just the process of healing itself was very cathartic, and it was also fun. There's some fun stories I enjoyed writing, and I never knew that I had the ability to put my experiences into words, so it was a neat process for me to see that come into fruition.
And you haven't always been a flight attendant. What was your other history, your other background, other careers that you pursued?
Correct. So I've only been flying about 9 years. I've had so many jobs since I was a teenager in the service industry, but most of my job before becoming a flight attendant, I was a German interpreter for American Express. I lived in Germany for 2 years, and so, of course, became fluent in the language. And I also speak publicly on the importance of self-esteem.
And you also, I read, also have a creative side. You were a dancer at one point.
Yes, well, it started out, I got into gymnastics at a young age, and I really loved it. Trampoline was my first love, and then I took it to the floor and got on to some tumbling teams in junior high, and then I was asked to be mascot my senior year in high school, and with the aim of getting on the college collegiate cheerleading team. And that was a lot of fun. We competed at nationals at competition down in Disney World. And so that was kind of my background as far as, like, performing. I became a dancer. I had taken dancing earlier when I was younger, like clogging and modern dance in college. But the dancing, I became a strip dancer briefly, and a whole different art in itself, and kind of terrifying, actually.
Yeah. How did that impact your life?
It was huge, believe it or not. You know, I used to think that, you know, strip dancers became dancers, you know, out of ego or for other reasons. But for me, like, it was very vital for myself, my body image. I didn't like myself at the time very much, and especially my body. But I was desperate. I needed the money, so I embarked on it. And the money was good, and the external validation was exactly what I needed. And I'm glad that I only did it long enough in order to build myself up to where my self-confidence and my body image, and I'm glad that I left when I did before I got into too much trouble.
Well, congratulations on that that escape. Who does this book appeal to and why?
That's a great question. I originally thought it would appeal just mainly, I write about my sexuality and my religious upbringing, so I didn't know if that was just going to be my main audience, but, you know, through the process of writing it, I realize it, it can be relatable to everyone. My stories carry universal themes of belonging, love, self-esteem, self-confidence, personal power, escapism. So I think wherever the reader falls on the spectrum, there's something relatable. I've been very fortunate so far. The colleagues and trusted friends that have read my book so far, I've been very grateful for their feedback. Especially, it seems the majority so far have been from women in their 40s and 50s, and it means so much to me when they embrace me and tears in their eyes, and they talk about the courage and the honesty and just how it inspires them to kind of start making changes that they've been waiting to make in their own lives.
Are you a cross-country runner, or is that just something that you did while you were in college or university?
No, so I started running out of competition, really. I had some friends who were marathon runners, and I wanted to be part of the game. And then I just fell in love with it, the endorphin high. And then, you know, it's a great way to, I love to eat and drink, so it's a great way to stay slim, and just kind of became a physical form of my therapy.
And you're still doing that then?
Yes.
Fabulous. And potato harvest, that's another thing you mentioned. What is that all about?
Potato harvest. So I grew up in Idaho, and my sister and brother-in-law owned some potato farms. I worked a couple harvests with them, but before working with them, every October, all the schools let out for 2 weeks for potato harvest, whether you work in the potatoes or not, just because there's so many, it's such a vibrant economy there, and so many students are missing from school, so they, it's kind of a nice vacation, but also a good way to earn money as a high school student, or even junior high. And so mainly just harvesting the potatoes and getting them ready for the winter and to sell out and ship to the world.
So establishes a good work ethic also, I think.
Yeah, it's hard work, but I'm, you know, it feels good to be able to say, you know, I worked hard, long hour days, made good money, I'm dirty, but now I can relax, and it's very self-fulfilling.
I spent a lot of time doing farm work when I was a child, actually before going to probably elementary school, on through maybe aged 10, and it wasn't our personal farm, but I loved every moment of it. So I can relate to the hard work part and the joy of being outdoors and feeling an accomplishment when you finished a task.
Definitely.
How long did it take you to write this book?
It took me about 4.5 years. Not that it's a long book by any means, but just it was quite a process. When I started, I didn't know what to write about or what I'd feel comfortable writing about, and I didn't even know that I'd be willing to share it publicly. So I kind of brainstormed a list of experiences that I might feel comfortable sharing, and in no particular order, especially in it, not in chronological order. I just started writing as I felt inspired to. Did all of my writing in a tablet, so freehand, mostly sitting on a jump seat when I had a spare minute or two working flights and on layovers. And some of the stories were difficult emotionally. I never realized that I hadn't totally healed from the pain that I had repressed. And so some of the stories were very exhausting. So when I completed the first draft of those types of stories, I took a long break, sometimes several months, and I'm not wanting to go back to it. It's a lot of hard work, but something, you know, eventually just kind of nudged me inside, like, okay, I really should get back to this. Because once I started the healing process, I wanted to complete it. So it took 4.5 years, breaks in between, and kind of figuring out along the way what it was eventually going to evolve into and what I wanted to do with it when I was finished.
Tell our listeners just a little bit more about the healing process. What were you challenged with?
Yeah, so I knew at an early age that I was gay, but I didn't know how to talk about it or express it. I grew up Mormon in a rural community in Idaho where everyone was predominantly Mormon. And just to not fit in the box drew some unwelcome, uncomfortable attention. So I'm half Mexican, and so I have darker skin, and just that fact brought on some bullying and teasing. And then plus the fact I skipped a grade in elementary school. So So my fellow classmates didn't like that. If you were different, it wasn't a good thing. And so I definitely was not going to reveal my secret if I could help it at all. So I think I overcompensated by just conforming to the religious dogma. I became a straight-A student. I kept that up, but I also kind of put on this facade of being the perfect Mormon boy. I don't know if it was pretense or just, I know inside it felt very hypocritical, but I wanted to cover up my secret so much, so I just overcompensated in that direction. It was kind of sad because it led me to seek validation. You know, I was like all this negative self-talk inside, and, you know, what the religion preached down against homosexuality and what I thought my parents, my family and friends would say and how they would treat me and ostracize me, I kind of beat myself down inside. So I started seeking external validation, which started me down a path of a double life. So I went through as far as I could. I became a missionary, but eventually I was tired of the game, and I confessed, and I got excommunicated. But then I was free and available to get into this big wide world, and I kind of like there was no reins anymore. I let loose, and the floodgates of hedonism flew wide open, and I kind of lost myself in that because I still didn't have a good sense of who I was and just my self-worth. But luckily, through self-discovery and developing my self-worth, I reconciled my identity and I landed back on the ground safely. So.
Excellent. Well, there are probably some underlying messages you want to get across that are in addition to writing your life story. What would those be?
Yeah, definitely. So I wish I knew when I was going through my experiences that I wasn't alone. So I hope that, you know, the reader takes away that they're not alone, and most importantly, that that they matter. That I matter, you matter, we all matter, and we all have a story. But our circumstances don't define us, and we have the personal power and the choice to empower ourselves. We just have to tap into it and believe in that.
Is there one particular scene or story in the chapters here? I notice a lot of individuals' names in here, many of which are a one-name title. One title I'm sure I'll mispronounce. I'm calling it Achen, like the American Idol guy, but I think it's pronounced Achen, perhaps.
Well, it's actually the name of a city in Germany, pronounced Aachen.
Aachen,
I'm
sorry
about
that.
It borders Belgium and Holland. That's really where I came of age and where things started to turn around for me. After I got excommunicated, I wanted to go back to Germany because I didn't feel like I belonged at home, and I miss Germany and the language and the people and the culture, so I applied to become a nanny, an au pair, and I went to Aachen, and that's where I took care of four kids. They were older in age, between the ages of 5 and 15, and I really kind of learned responsibility. I became a big brother. I'm the baby of my family, so it was kind of like being a big brother. I never had that opportunity before. And just taking on that responsibility role, unfortunately, I had a falling out with the host mother, and I had met some friends on the side who recognized that I was being exploited, and they started to teach me to stand up for myself and build my self-confidence. And so I confronted the mother, not in a confrontational way, of course, but it didn't work out, and she kind of laid into me verbally, and I was so, at that point, still very dependent on other people to define just who I was and my worth, and so I was broken down, and I remember asking for the day off. I slid to the ground and bawled uncontrollably. I didn't know what I was going to do. I could either, you know, believe all the negative things that she said about me and spiral down, and who knows, it self-destructively, or I could actually tap into something. Like, I knew that there was better, and I wanted better. So I made two phone calls home, one to a friend and the other to my parents, and just their words of love and support was what I needed just to pick my feet up. And I wrote letters that night and left and moved out, not knowing where I was going to go or how I was going to stay or what I was going to do. But luckily, I moved in with my friends, and I started working manual labor for the remainder of my year in Germany. And it turned out to be a very positive coming-of-age experience for me, just my commencement of that self-confidence building, which built my self-esteem, and just knowing that I'm resilient and powerful lesson I've carried through with other situations in my life afterward.
Fabulous. The story of Ray Cook, titled Reclaimed. Ray, where do we get copies of this book?
Thank you for asking. Always through the website Reclaimed at rclmd.com. Of course, you can also order from your local bookstore or your preferred online retailer such as Amazon, etc.
Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay. It's been a privilege. I thank the listeners as well.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you. Here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing. This is J. Douglas Barker. We review a Jet Set Report publishing release titled Lost in Hotels, A Love Affair in the Most Extraordinary Places. And our author is M. Martin. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Your novel, Lost in Hotels, centers around the basic storyline of a long-distance affair. In the first chapter of your book, one of the main characters makes the following reflection. These few moments in my life are just for me. I linger in thoughts and memories of people from years ago and the roads that led me to where I am today. That sets the tone for the story. Tell me about your background, first of all, as a world traveler and some of the adventures that you've personally been involved in.
Well, I spent the bulk of my career as the U.S. editor of a women's fashion magazine based in the U.K., before segueing into travel and covering predominantly luxury travel for the U.S. and the U.K. markets with Jet Set Report, which is a luxury online travel magazine.
Is this the first novel that you've written?
This is my first novel. I've written a few travel books in the past that were primarily guides and information, you know, based on different locations, under different magazine titles. But this is the first book that I've written personally.
Tell my listeners the genesis of this storyline. Where did it come from? What motivated you to put it together?
So I travel quite a bit for work, and I find myself in actually all of the hotels that are in the book I've been to personally. And I wanted to write a story that took into account so many of these incredible places, but also a love affair that happens between a woman that's lost in life, who has everything that she thought she wanted to have, but is missing that spark of love and of passion. And she goes about finding it in her very own and unique way.
Was this a South American setting, or is it elsewhere in the world?
So each chapter changes location. So it starts off in New York in our main character Catherine's home, and then it goes to Rio and Paris and South Africa and a couple of locations in Europe before coming back to New York.
Many people who have read your book are astounded that you're able to write from the woman's perspective as well as the male. How are you able to accomplish that?
That's 10 years of women's publishing. Each chapter alternates narratives. So it goes from a woman's point of view, which is Catherine's, our main character, and then it alternates to a male point of view, which is David Summers, who's our other main character.
Every author has a target audience. Who is yours, and why do you think they would be interested in this story?
I feel as though anyone who likes a really strong, character-driven romance would find something that they really liked in the book. Also, I'm trying to pull in people who are interested in travel and may have the ability or just the interest to go to these very different locations that each chapter is set in.
284 pages is an ambitious start and one to be commended. How long did it take you to complete this project?
It took me, the actual writing, it was about 8 months of solid daily writing, and then about 3 months of editing.
I talk to a lot of authors who are journalers. Do you keep track of your travels and your daily activities, or is this something that just popped into your head and into your heart and you decided to write it?
Well, with Jetset Report, our content is updated daily, and it's mostly a news-driven website, so a lot of my travels I write for the website, and you'll see my various journeys, you know, diagrammed and detailed on the website. So that's kind of my version of journaling, but in terms of actually keeping a notebook and jotting down the details of each trip, I keep a small notebook, and I'll normally detail the various feelings or something I see or a story that comes to mind, but I'm not really a traditional journaler.
Any of the authors in the marketplace that we'd recognize that you admire their work?
Of course. You know, E.L. James definitely set a standard in this market of you know, taking romance and making it a more sensual, sometimes erotic read. Sylvia Days covered the market very well. What I hope to bring is a different demographic to this market, and hopefully a more urban woman, a woman who reads Vogue, a woman who reads Elle magazine, who wants a more maybe sophisticated story and wants to, you know, also in the journey take an incredible trip, which, you know, covers so many different locations.
In writing Lost in Hotels, did you start off with perhaps an outline of the story and then flesh it out as you were beginning to develop the story?
Yes, several editors that I've worked with always said that a good book always begins with a good outline. So I took the main story that I wanted to tell, and I outlined it the best I could. And then I allowed the sub-characters and the subplots to kind of develop on their own through the writing journey. In terms of the ending, traditionally romance stories have a very happy ending, and I wanted to play with that a little and see what readers thought.
Many of our listeners are wannabe writers and are envious of the fact that you actually have something in print. Michael, did you receive any outside advice that you put into the process of writing this first novel?
probably you have to be happy with what you write personally. You send the manuscript out to so many people, and so many people read it and give their thoughts and their feedback. But at the end of the day, you have to be happy with it personally, or else all the criticism and reviews and critiques of the work will, you know, kind of change the way you look at what you've written. And, you know, if you have a strong foundation that you believe in what you wrote, I think that carries through the entire marketing process.
Lost in Hotels is a catchy title. Is there a scene in there that stands out? If I was an individual looking for a story that I might put into film, is there a scene in here that really grabs you?
It would probably be the initial scene where our main characters, David and Catherine, meet, which is on, it's a rooftop pool at a very famous hotel in Rio de Janeiro. And Catherine is, in fact, married, and she is at the hotel by herself on a work assignment. And she, you know, she's keeping her posture, and she meets a man who, you know, sparks some interest, but she, you know, tries to respect the boundaries. And the tension that builds for her, and, you know, the question that so many people in monogamous relationships and traditional marriages find themselves asking is how to walk the line of respecting your vows, but also feeling alive and feeling that spark and feeling desired. And I think that that's where the book takes off, and I think that that's something that many readers find themselves, you know, asking themselves the same question and being very much interested in.
Michael, as you'd introduce this book to someone, is there a specific approach you'd use that would capture their attention and get them interested?
I would probably say it's a glamorous, sensual getaway read that's probably perfect around Valentine's Day in cold weather.
I can see a fireplace and a couple of drinks sitting there. That's
exactly.
What does it mean to be lost in hotels?
It's probably a more personal phrase. It's when I go to a new location, somewhere off the coast of Italy or, you know, somewhere in Africa, you momentarily find yourself totally forgetting what your life is at home and, you know, starting this new life in this hotel where there's kind of a sense of familiarity and a sense of home. And I coined that phrase as being lost in hotels. That's what that means for me. For our characters, it's they are actually, you know, lost. They somehow lost their way in hotels, you know, and they eventually find it again.
How young were you when you started, if I may ask that question, when you started your travel industry adventures?
Well, I was an exchange student when I was 17 to Germany, and that's kind of started the travel bug for me. And then in my late 20s, I went full-time to being a full-time travel writer.
Fabulous. And of all the hotels and the places you visited, which hotel stands out as a great place to visit?
There is a hotel that's actually featured in the second to last chapter in the book. It's called Hotel Rea. And so many people, when they hear about Italy, they hear about Capri and they hear about Positano. But there's a group of islands called the Aeolian Islands that's an archipelago around a volcanic island. And there's one hotel that's 12 rooms, and it's privately owned, and it's actually probably the most incredible place I've ever been.
That sounds charming. I personally have visited Lake Como and love that area and that region, and have been tempted to go back there for extended visits.
You know, it just kind of sweeps you. Italy in general is just such an incredible, there's so many different sides to it, and you know, especially as an American, where we romanticize the idea of it, and when we finally actually get to see it and experience it, I think it's one of the few places that really lives up to our expectations.
I agree with that. There are other books in the marketplace that tell romantic stories. This one is different. How?
This one takes luxury travel. This is a journey. This is a adventure that someone can take who wants to travel, wants to visit these incredibly glamorous locations and hotels, and it lets them go through that experience from checking in to seeing the sights, to going to the pool, to seeing what restaurants are there. And along the way, you have this incredible romance between these two characters.
And in your book, you ask this question, what if you met someone who's worth losing everything for? Is that an underlying theme or underlying question that you're posing in your book?
That's an underlying theme. You know, it's I would not make the same choices that my characters probably make, but it's, you know, someone being in that position where they've already mapped out their life and they've picked their life partner, and then being taken out of that, taken out of their home, put into a foreign environment, and being tested and having their relationship tested and seeing how they react.
What was the most challenging part of writing your book?
The most challenging part of writing the actual book was doing the labor. Sitting down every day and writing 108,000 words is, you know, a daunting task. And I think for writers, doing the actual labor is what makes you a writer. And I think that that's the hardest part and that's the most gratifying part. But that is, the labor tends to be the most challenging aspect of writing a book.
The title of the book, Lost in Hotels, A Love Affair in the Most Extraordinary Places. And our author, Michael Martin. Michael, thank you for joining me today. Where can I get a copy of this book?
You can log on to our website, lostinhotels.com, and you can buy through iBooks, Amazon, Kindle, Kobo, Nook, or order a paperback copy.
Thank you for sharing the story behind the story and the novel Lost in Hotels. Our author, M. Martin. For Indie Book Publishing, Jet Set Report Publishing, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is Chaz, subtitled Foreshadowing Destiny, and our author is Mike Arthur. Mike, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Jay. Appreciate you having me on the air.
How would you describe your book? Is it an adventure tale, action-adventure, mystery? What category does it fall under?
Well, I'd actually say it's an action-adventure story. It's kind of a Christian fiction. It's got a lot of Christian baseline into it, but it's a fictional story. It starts with a man trapped in Colorado fighting his way home.
Trapped in Colorado. The back of your book reads this and poses this question. Have you ever wondered what life would be like if an electromagnetic pulse hit the United States? That's the premise, and in the story itself, the first chapter, one of your key characters mentions this in his narrative. Listen, I hate to tell you, but the United States has suffered a nuclear attack. Expand for us the story and tell us the main character's name.
His name is actually Chaz, and that's C-H-A-S. I've got him pictured as a man in his 40s. He's actually a sales engineer by trade, and he finds himself in eastern Colorado, and his home is actually in Missouri. What happens here is we have an EMP pulse, and, of course, people know that with an EMP pulse, you lose pretty much anything that's electronic. That would be from telecommunications down to your computer, even your modern-day car. So he finds himself in this situation whereby without these assets, so to speak, he has to find a way to get himself home, and he's got roughly 600 miles to travel.
What you've just outlined is a present-day concern, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, and it doesn't even require a nuclear attack. You know, an EMP pulse can actually come from a solar flare, which historically has happened. So, yes, it is a very grave concern.
You mentioned in your opening commentary or comments that this had a Christian theme or Christian underlying message, And yet in reading your biography or your history, it wasn't always that way. You, at one point in your life, were an agnostic.
That is correct. That is correct. All the way up into my late 30s, I actually fought the Word of God. Had a very troubling period in my time in my life whereby I just didn't want to believe. I guess you could say I was hard-headed and hard-hearted, and had some things that happened to me. Had a near-death experience that kind of transcended everything and turned me around and pointed me in what I want to say is the right direction.
What motivated you to put this story together?
Well, actually, what happened was when 911 transpired, I had friends of mine who actually got trapped on the road. And they had a very difficult time getting themselves home. No air travel, of course. Rental cars were all gone. I even had one buddy of mine that actually went out and bought a brand new Suburban just so he could drive home from Phoenix back to Wisconsin. So I thought to myself, you know, what would happen if we had an EMP pulse and you actually had no travel, no communications, and a man had to struggle and get his way home? And I got to thinking along with that venue would be the rapture. And let's just say we had an EMP pulse, the rapture coincided with it. You have a lot of people missing at that point in time, good, solid-based Christians. And what you end up with now is a situation where the people who are left, let's just say they're a little bit less than trustworthy. And so he has to contend with that, find his way home. And so that was everything I thought about when I put the book together.
This book, the term rapture, that's a Christian term and doesn't have anything to do with kissing your sweetheart. Explain what the rapture means in your viewpoint.
You can actually take 2 Thessalonians talks about it in the Bible, about in the twinkling of an eye, a disappearance. There's a belief among certain Christians that at a given point in time, Christ shall come back for what they call his bride. And a lot of Christians at that point in time shall be taken up, or upon a call by God or a loud trumpet, they shall be taken up into heaven. And I know that not all Christians believe that, but a fair majority I follow do, people like John Hagee, Perry Stone, David Jeremiah. A lot of those people, if you get on their website, you can actually see and look at some of the information they have concerning the rapture.
In your book, does that count as a major focus of the story, or is there more to it than that?
Well, and actually, if you keep in back of your mind, it actually takes a lot of the people on a day-to-day basis out of the realm of the world. For example, he meets a military patrol in the book, and the officer who he is talking to talks about 40% of the military has been, I can't even say the word, incapacitated because of the lack of personnel. And so, yes, there are impacts into the story with people missing, law enforcement missing, good solid-based Christians by the synopsis of the story are gone.
Who do you think this book is going to appeal to and why?
Well, it's been kind of interesting. I've had the book out since August, and the people who have contacted me are people like doomsday preppers, people who like action-adventure. I've actually had several Christians that have called and asked me questions about things just like the rapture. There's a lot of scripture I put into the book. It underlines things that are happening in the book, some of the themes that I actually wanted Chaz to talk to. Matter of fact, I'll take on different subject matter in the book as a moment of thought on Chaz's part. For example, I'll go after hackers. And I think they're immoral in the fact that the damage they do is far beyond the payment they make in as far as punishment. Just as an example, I also talk to different things like the U.S. Government and their spending. I think this country's got a serious problem when you take a look at the national debt. And I outline in one of my chapters some of the different things that it doesn't matter which party, but they've all made mistakes that have contributed to this debt and the situation we find ourselves in today.
So your key character, Chaz, would you describe him as a seeker in this story?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. He's a seeker in the fact that he's actually looking to solidify his own personality and get a better grasp of the knowledge of God and what's taking place in his world. He's a thinker. He's a person that takes a look at all different aspects of life and tries to mentally work his way through it and come up with the right solution. A lot of it's scripture-based.
You've got 170 pages. How long did it take you to actually pen this novel?
Can you believe 2 years?
2 years.
part of the reason being is I wrote it on a part-time basis. I travel extensively, and with evenings to myself sitting in my hotel room, a lot of the book was written in longhand. And then I'd have to come home, and I or my wife would transcribe it over onto the computer.
That in itself is an amazing task. If I wrote my materials in longhand, I couldn't read it. So that's a miracle in itself.
I understand. Some of mine was hard to decipher, too.
And is this the first book you've written, or are you prolific in writing? Is this the first thing you've published?
No, this is actually the first one I put together.
And are you writing a second sequel to this?
Well, here's kind of the situation. What I'd like to do, depending on how the sales on this one go and if it becomes well-received, I've actually got in the back of my mind a trilogy. And it would actually coincide with not only the rapture, but the time of Jacob's trouble, that seven-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got some outlines on it, but there again, it just depends, to be honest with you, the financials.
Absolutely. And how would you introduce this book to someone who doesn't know you or even know the idea of a rapture?
Well, what I've basically done is I've told people it's an action-adventure story. I says, think of my character as a cross between John Wayne and Indiana Jones. I said, if you like a good action-adventure story with a little Christian background to it, well, I says, pick up the book and read it. And I've actually, it's been kind of intriguing. I've got one lady who's called me and said that she's actually bought seven of them, and she's distributed them to different friends. She thought some of the lessons in the book they could learn, and I just kind of chuckled at that. But it's been very interesting, the feedback I've get. I've actually had people who are what I consider non-Christians come up and start asking me questions about, like, the rapture and different things that I quoted as scripture in the book. So that's been what I think kind of fascinating and been a very positive aspect coming out of that book.
So the book really can appeal to a large audience from your perspective.
Very large audience.
Is there a scene or an action moment in the novel that would make a great enticement for someone to read this book?
Well, I can think of a couple of them. There's, and first off, I want to kind of quantify the fact that this book, at certain aspects, can get just a little bloody. But, of course, the Bible isn't actually without blood. But, yeah, there's a chapter in there, two of them, where Chaz actually has to defend himself. And there it involves guns, which is kind of a naughty word in today's world, but a fact of matter. And I think that they'll find, though, especially those people who like action-adventure, will eat that up. I've had a lot of guys who have read the book and told me that the action side of the book was just phenomenal. Matter of fact, when they picked it up to start reading it, they said it moved so quickly they couldn't put it down.
Beautiful. That's a great commendation of your work.
Well, I'd like to think so.
What sets this book apart? There are other books in the marketplace that are action adventures and some that are religious in its context. I'm thinking of the Left Behind series.
And to be honest with you, Jay, it's kind of an offshoot in some aspects of a Left Behind series. The only thing is that we've got total isolation in this case, and it's the story of one man's trials. In Left Behind, you have a whole... I don't know if you've ever seen the movies or not. I found them fascinating, but you'll have a whole political situation where everybody has to work together to overcome. In this case, one man against the world.
Was there a challenging part of putting this book together?
Oh, boy, I tell you what, there were several. Time being one. The other one is I had several rewrites. I got into it. It's kind of funny. Once you start to write something and then you go back and take a look at it and you realize maybe you've got errors or just don't quite come together, then you have to do a total rewrite. And I would say, yeah, I wrote the book, but I bet I rewrote it two times.
Wow.
To get it all together.
That is challenging. Where do we get copies of this book? The title again is Chaz, the subtitle Foreshadowing Destiny, and our author, Mike Arthur. Mike, where do we get copies of your book?
Well, I've got a website out there called arthurauthor.com/book, and through that website you can pick it up at, say, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Westbo Publishing, who is my publishing company.
Thank you for sharing the information on your story.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Jay.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbo Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.